On April 30th, 2009, at 3:53 p.m., Brian Maltzand sent an email to the staff at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology reading, "A pair of great blue herons are carrying sticks up to the snag." The snag is a large, long-dead tree in the middle of the pond in full view of many lab offices and meeting rooms. Brian's email announced the first known great blue heron nest in Sapsucker Woods. Several of us without windows found ourselves gravitating to the Sapsucker Lounge in the following days as the nest grew. The herons were not marked, so there was usually no way of knowing which bird was which. The Birds of North America Online says that males are usually the ones who bring sticks, and the four times I observed copulation and thus could be certain it was the male who brought the stick. It was fascinating watching the two interact with elaborate displays when one or the other returned to the nest. The first sticks were the hardest to place, but the nest grew, and by May 6th or 7th, it was clear that there was an egg in there. We couldn't see into the nest, but now the birds were taking turns hunkering down, we assumed, to incubate. Both male and female great blue herons have incubation patches, and both take turns incubating. According to the BNA, the male spends more time on the eggs than the female during daylight. We watched the birds take turns incubating, and they continued nest building and mating behaviors as well. The last time I witnessed copulation was on May 11th. According to the BNA, great blue herons typically lay eggs at two-day intervals, and it takes about 26 days for them to hatch. I was getting suspicious that an egg had hatched around June 4th or 5th. The parents kept standing up in the nest and looking down, touching or moving something hidden below, but we had no way of looking inside the nest to see what was happening. We started seeing stirrings of something white and fluffy by June 10th, and I got a photo of a chick on June 11th. Within a few days, there was evidence of three chicks. I sometimes saw them bobbing up and down in such a way that it appeared there might be four, and finally saw and photographed all four at once on June 17th. As the chicks got bigger, the four could still disappear into the nest, which began to seem as bottomless as Mary Poppins' handbag. By July, they spent most of their non-sleeping time preening and flapping their wings. When one or the other parent flew in, they all made interesting clattering sounds begging for food, starting out with heads raised and bodies lowered, but standing taller and taller as the feeding continued. All four made their first flight on July 30th. They continued to return to the nest for feedings and at nightfall through at least August 11th. If a pair of herons nests in the snag next year, we won't be certain whether they are this year's pair or not. If more than one nest is built next year, we won't have any way of knowing whether other nesting birds are our young or herons that hatched elsewhere. We may have witnessed the inception of a breeding colony, or the habitat may continue to support one pair without attracting more. Whatever the future brings, the great blue heron family of the summer of 2009 will long be remembered and treasured. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.